Hi, and welcome to I Know You Meant Well, a podcast brought to you by the Activist Collab. I'm your host, Ashley Bearden. As a documentary filmmaker, I've had the opportunity to tell so many stories about young people doing important things. But in the summer of 2020, while covering stories about the social justice protests and the pandemic, I became frustrated by the overly inspirational way the media often tells stories about young people, particularly young activists. So I created the Activist Collab as a way to bring young people together to have honest conversations about activism. On this podcast, we talk about the many ways people mean well, but often miss the mark. We can't heal what's being ignored, so we call it out, but in a way that we hope leaves you feeling seen, held, and respected. Today, we're going to talk about eating disorder awareness and what that looks like in communities of color and for those who identify as non-binary. I hope you enjoy today's conversation. All right. Well, I'm so excited today to be joined by Jalissa Minaya and Nina Schubert, who are both members of the Activist Collab and both advocates for eating disorder awareness. So thank you guys both for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
I'm hoping we could just start by having you tell us a little bit about yourselves. Jalissa, maybe you could go first and just kind of give us a little backstory.
My name is Jalissa Minaya. I'm a 16-year-old activist from Dallas, Texas. I'm a figure skater and an eating disorder recovery. And my activism started around 2020 towards the end of it. And that's when I was introduced to the Activist Collab. Before then, it was just me documenting my recovery on Instagram. So yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Great. Nina, can you give us a little bit about you?
Yeah, so I'm Nina. I'm 22 years old, and I have been probably advocating about eating disorder recovery for almost, I want to say probably 4 or 5 years now. When I was 15, so in 2014, I had gotten diagnosed with my eating disorder. And I went into treatment. I was doing treatment for like 2 to 3 years pretty consistently. And then when I got out of my last program, when I was 17, I really wanted to start an Instagram, really share my story. In the beginning, it was more for myself to just keep myself accountable and vulnerable. But as time went on, I kind of realized people were listening and people were sharing their own stories. And I really found this amazing community that helped me continue my recovery. And so that was what really inspired me to advocate about eating disorders and to this day continue to advocate.
That's great. Thank you guys for both sort of sharing your story, because I know that this comes from such a personal place for both of you. Jalissa, can you tell us a little bit about how you started your advocacy work? So I know you were documenting on your own personal Instagram, but can you kind of tell us how that even got started?
Yeah, definitely. So it was around March 2020 that I started my account. So right before the pandemic, I was actually on a road trip and I was kind of like contemplating the idea for a few weeks because I was supposed to be going off to treatment. And so I was like, I just want to kind of start writing about like my recovery experience, what going to treatment's like, what recovering in 2020 as a 15-year-old is like, already having knowledge about like the intuitive eating and the health at every size movement. And so I kind of like learned about that and just wanted to continue that. And that's where my account came from. And then the pandemic started. So I couldn't go to treatment. And so my recovery account became like one of the main sources of community for me, especially since I wasn't able to see people and I was connecting with people all around the world. And that was going on for around like 8 or 9 months. And then Ashley from the Activist Collab, Ashley Bearden, actually reached out to me and she asked me if I wanted to be a part of the Activist Collab. And she was just telling me that she didn't know what she was going to do with this yet, but she wanted a group of young activists. And I was like, wait, I'm considered an activist. And so that's kind of how I started considering myself an activist. And then our project launched in January of 2021. And then things just started kind of coming from there. A lot of my posts started getting a lot more likes and comments and just a bigger audience. I was reaching a bigger audience. And then I was speaking at different events and getting contacted by different organizations and things like that. So it was like really cool. And the last like 7 months that I've just seen my account and even my own recovery just continue to grow, which has been really, really cool. And something I don't think would have been possible without the Activist Collab, because I didn't even know I was considered an activist until Ashley contacted me and spoke up about what she saw in me.
It's true. You're one of my best finds.
Thank you.
And Nina, how about you? I mean, it sounds like Jalissa's story, you know, creating this account as a way of chronicling your experience actually ended up helping you so much more. Even though you were trying to help other people, it really ended up, sounds like, helping you so much too. And Nina, have you experienced that as well?
Yeah, I definitely think that when I first, so for me, it all started with Instagram, as I had just gotten out of a residential treatment program that I had been for a month and a half. And I was kind of like, okay, I really want to, like, I still kind of half believed in recovery. I didn't necessarily want to fully commit to it. I was like, well, I still feel like this isn't 100% real. Like, you can't find true happiness the way people are talking about. And so I had started my Instagram as just kind of a way for me to have a safe space to like kind of vent or just kind of keep myself accountable with just like doing things that I told myself I'd do in recovery. And it was kind of just in the beginning, it was just me talking to myself. And then I remember in the first couple of months, like, I had people kind of commenting and following me. And I was like, oh, like, people are actually wanting to hear what I have to say. And I was kind of a little skeptical about it. I was like, I don't know, like, I don't know if I should be sharing this with everybody. But I think what was really important for me is when I started my recovery, never really felt like there was anyone in that I could follow or talk to or just listen to talk about recovery. And so I felt like if maybe I would have had that at a younger age, had somebody who was actively talking about these things, I might have realized I needed help earlier or things like that. So that really motivated me. And just some of the responses I got from people, the one that still touches my heart to this day is I had someone from Australia DM me. And they were like, I didn't realize like I had an eating disorder, and kind of your account really helped me realize I need to get help. And I ate today because of you. And I just remember like bawling my eyes out because it was just so powerful for me to know that like I was able to help somebody else in their recovery. And that's like all I ever really wanted. And that kind of made me realize I wanted to continue sharing my story. And like, no matter like what negative feedback I got from people, like if my story could help one person in their journey, it was worth it.
Yeah, I think you guys have both figured, you know, there's so many ways we use social media. And I think that this idea of the recovery accounts that have been created are really, you know, an important, when they're used properly, are really can be so incredibly helpful. You're right, telling the story that we don't always see, the beautiful, like edited images, or, you know, it's a little bit more raw and a little bit more real, means a lot more to people, you know?
Yeah.
I also wanted to see if you guys, I know you're both from kind of very different community backgrounds, and if you could kind of talk a little bit about how your eating disorder and your eating disorder recovery has been seen within your individual communities, and tell us a little bit about what your community is and yeah, how it showed up in each of those. Jalissa, why don't you go?
Yeah, definitely. So coming from like a mixed race background, and a lot of people describe me as like racially ambiguous. Everywhere I go, everyone's like, what are you? And I'm like, human. So that kind of thing, there was definitely like a lot of different, I guess, opinions and concepts people had in my own community. And even me growing up in a predominantly white area, and there were so many concepts that people had and ideas that people had in their head about what an eating disorder was and what it looked like. And when they found out like not everyone fits in that box,
What is your background? Tell us what your background is.
So I am Dominican, Puerto Rican, Black, and German. So definitely a lot of good food and just a lot of always fun with my family, especially since we're all like, I used to say when I was little, I'm so mixed up. And so that's kind of where we all are, like I'm on my dad's side, on my mom's side, on my grandma's side, like we all are multiracial and multicultural, which is just like really, really special to me. And so when I came forward to my immediate family, like the people in my household, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, like I didn't know that people of color go through this. And that was something that I didn't even know existed either. I was like, no, that's just like a white people thing, because that's what you see in media, and that's what you see on the internet, and that's what you see if you see an eating disorder being portrayed in a movie or a TV show. It's always a thin white girl who is like middle class and is, again, really thin, is straight, and is just has like a perfect little life and is just thin, wanting to get thinner, when eating disorders are so much more than that. And so when a lot of my family found out, and even some of my friends, they were like, what? And like, even me, like I couldn't come to terms with it for a really long time, because I was like, people like me don't go through things like this. And that was something that really contributed to why I struggled in silence for so long. And also just being in a predominantly white area really contributed to me not feeling like I was enough, because I didn't have the same hair texture or my skin wasn't as light. I remember as a child, I never ever wanted to play with the brown Barbies or play with the brown baby dolls and stuff like that, because I didn't see them as worthy, because that's how I felt about myself, because that's what I was learning from school and from those predominantly white areas. And so that was really difficult for me to come to terms with, especially in my eating disorder recovery, when I was like, yes, this is something I'm dealing with. And this is something that other people of color deal with, especially when we look at statistics. Like statistically speaking, eating disorders, they affect and disproportionately affect people of color just as much as they do white people. And we never see that when we talk about eating disorders. And that was another big motivator for me and my account. And that's why I started incorporating social justice and other things that aren't talked about on the average recovery account or the average media coverage, whatever it is. I just wanted to share things that were personal to me and something I wholeheartedly believed in.
I know you've talked a lot about on your account how you've seen white supremacy really show up in diet culture. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. Like the hierarchy of foods, when we look at foods of what's unhealthy and healthy, that's diet culture. And white supremacy is in diet culture. And so when we call certain foods good or bad, what are those foods that are considered good in today's society in America? And it's like, foods we see as good are pretty much bland foods, foods like fruits and vegetables. And there's nothing wrong with those foods. But a lot of them, the meals that are prepared with them are very like Eurocentric white foods. There's no like cultural, I guess no cultural significance behind them. Like if I was to go to a relative's house, like the foods that we eat would be seen as bad and unhealthy because they have carbs in them, or they have a lot of calories, or they have specific sauces in them and certain flavors that aren't low calorie and bland and healthy. So that's a really big way that white supremacy shows up in diet culture. And then also just what the standard is for beauty and bodies. We see a lot of thin white bodies, and that's what's seen as healthy. And that's what BMI is based off of, just white thin bodies, and other things like weight and just that in general. White is always the standard, and just a white person's body has always been the standard. And that's something that that's another way white supremacy shows up. And then also even like in the body positivity movement, now I guess modern day body positivity has completely been it's just completely different from what body positivity was meant for. And that was for Black and brown marginalized fat bodies. And now it's body positivity is the thing, is like, everybody's beautiful. Body positivity is for everyone. And yes, everyone's beautiful, but that's not the point of body positivity. And it's so, I guess, like annoying and kind of frustrating sometimes when you see a space that was meant for marginalized communities be taken over once again by white people who already have enough space in the world, who already have spaces that they can feel safe and welcomed in, when people with my skin color or people with a specific body size or a disability or whatever it might be, don't have that same feeling and that same inclusivity. And so when we see those white people take over yet another space, it's like, okay, well, what can we have? What are we allowed to have? What can we have as ours? What can we have to feel safe and welcomed in? So I guess those are just like three examples of where I see white supremacy show up the most.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely when I first went into recovery, like, I'm, no matter what, I'm always going to be very privileged. And as a white person, like, I come from Russia, you can't get much whiter than that. But like, as I got older and continued to grow up, like, I did see a lot of what I looked like in the media. But I think things really changed for me when I started identifying as non-binary. And so that really kind of changed a lot for me, because I went from, oh, I'm a female, I need to look feminine, there's this ideal view of a woman, I need to look like that, to, okay, I don't feel comfortable is feminine or masculine, I kind of just exist as me. And then it was that question of like, okay, what does that look like though? Because for so long I had these images that I was basing myself upon. And I was like, well, I need to look like that, or this is what other people, this is what my friends look like and things like that. But now that I'm non-binary, it's kind of like, it gives me a lot more freedom to be who I want to be. And at the same time, I've gone probably a majority of my life not knowing who I am. I've gone kind of just molding myself to the people around me, molding myself to what society wants us to look like. Mm-hmm. And so it's really been a really big struggle with self-identity, body image, self-worth. And so, like, even in therapy today with my therapist, we were just talking about kind of how being non-binary for me isn't a trend, it isn't a choice. Well, it's a choice for me, but it's also not like, I'm not choosing this to kind of get attention, or I'm not choosing this because I just want to do something everyone else is doing. It's no, I don't feel comfortable identifying as female, I don't feel comfortable identifying as male, I just kind of exist as me. And so it's definitely been a lot, because I have been in recovery for almost 7 years now, which is crazy to me. But at the same time, like, this is a whole new terrain for me. It's me trying to figure out, okay, like, yes, I've gained weight and that's okay, and I don't need to look a certain way. And oh my gosh, like, I think one of the biggest things that I noticed over the however many years I've been on Instagram is the comparison photos, which are so toxic and they're not beneficial to anyone. And like, whether it's from an eating disorder recovery standpoint, there's also the weight loss ones, like, they just aren't beneficial to anyone in the community, because there is already so much struggle with comparison. And then going out there and being like, well, this was me at my lowest, and then you looking at it and going, okay, why didn't I look like that at my lowest? Was I not, like, was my eating disorder not bad enough? Like, and that was something I really struggled with, was I didn't want to admit it, because I was like, well, people have it worse than me. People look worse than me. Like, I'm fine. I don't have anything wrong with me. When in reality, eating disorders show up in all shapes and sizes and different ways. It can be male, female, non-binary. It can be based off your race. It doesn't discriminate from different religions. It literally anyone and everyone could get an eating disorder. And so I think it's really important for me to remind myself that I'm human and my body is changing, my perspectives are changing, and I just need to continually kind of work on myself, whether that's talking with my therapist or doing a support group or seeing a psychiatrist to be on medication because of the chemical imbalance in my brain. Mm-hmm. And so that's definitely been a really big self-discovery for me, is kind of finally taking that step to be like, okay, who is Nina? Like, both physically, but also mentally, like, what do I like? What do I feel comfortable with? And so, like, it's just been playing around a lot, like, especially with my fashion right now. It's been, okay, like, I used to wear dresses all the time, and now I'm someone who despises dresses. Like, I don't, like, I tried to try one on at the mall the other day, and I was like, in, and I was like, no, like, got it off so quickly. But, and that's okay. Like, yeah, we are continually changing and evolving over time. And it's okay if you're different than the person you were a week ago, a month ago, a year ago.
Yeah. That
change can be so good.
Yeah.
And I think that was something very hard for me to recognize, is that, okay, I'm changing, but at the same time, I'm growing, and yeah, I'm definitely not the person I was 7 years ago when I first started treatment. And I'm really proud of the person I am now, because I've worked very hard to get to where I am. And I was like, another thing I was talking about with my therapist, but like, just thinking back at like how far I've come in those 7 years, like from the point I was in 7 years ago with my eating disorder and like how much I was struggling to versus now I can go out to restaurants. I can go grocery shopping without wanting to cry. And like all these things I was able to achieve because I did fully commit to recovery and finally allow myself to be who I want to be, not this image that other people want me to be.
Yeah. I love that. I love that so much because I can relate a lot too. But yeah, I love that. Just everything you said was just like, yeah.
You too. Oh my gosh. I'm like sitting here and I was like, yes, Jalissa. Yes. I was like, can you just talk to me for like an hour and just like educate me on everything?
I would love to.
I love it too. And it's so true. It's like we change all the time. And for some reason, there is this idea of like changing not being a good thing and changing being something like, well, that's not how you are. And you're like, well, yeah, it's not how I was last week, but that's how it is this week. And I think just giving ourselves the grace to be able to change and figure out who we are. I mean, you know, I'm 44 years old and I'm still figuring it out all the time, you know?
I can't believe you're 44.
I know. Yeah. No, there's no way. I want to see a birth certificate, please.
You guys are very sweet. So I just want to end this amazing conversation by hopefully you guys have an example or each of you has an example of something that somebody has said to you throughout your recovery where you think that your I know you meant well story. Do you have one that you can share?
Yeah. Okay. I have one. So mine was when I first told one of my friends that I was struggling with an eating disorder. And she looked at me like this, like, and was like, you don't look like it though. And that's something that I hear a lot from a lot of other people. And I think people just think that's a compliment because when we think of like someone with an eating disorder, like when we just hear eating disorder, we automatically think anorexia, which is automatically tied to an emaciated, really thin body that looks like really sick and unhealthy. And so when my friend told me that, I think she was expecting me to be like, oh my God, thank you. Thank you so much. Like that, oh, I'm recovered. But I was like, oh, and that really like, I felt like I took one step forward, but three steps back, because that taught me that like, oh, I shouldn't tell anyone because no one's going to believe me because I don't look like I have one. And I was able to talk about it with her later and be like, yeah, that was like really unhelpful. And, yeah, so she was definitely like very, I guess good about it when I talked to her and just was very teachable. And she always tells me that she like learns things from my recovery account, which like makes me happy. But yeah, I know that not everyone's that fortunate to have that type of response and feedback, but I was very thankful that I did. So I guess that's like my little,
good story. Cause yeah, that sounds like something that if you aren't thinking too hard about it, that might feel like something you should say to somebody to make them feel better. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think hearing these examples are always really helpful. Nina, do you have one?
Yeah, I can definitely play off Jalissa's because like, there's so many different sayings people will say to you. Like, I know I've heard like, well, you don't look like you have an eating disorder, or God, I wish I had your strength, or like things like that, where it's very invalidating. And it's like, I'm going through this really big struggle right now. And I know you meant well, but like those things are affecting me. Cause again, it's that comparison aspect. It's like, okay, why am I not sick enough? Like why don't people get this? Like, why don't they understand that this is really hard for me? And I think it's definitely like over the years gotten better for me personally, because I talk about it so openly now. And I feel like there is definitely a lot more coverage on it. But at the same time, like there's still like, I still have friends who are in recovery who have people tell them every day, well, you should go on a diet, or like so many different things. And it's like, you really got to be careful because you never know what somebody is struggling with, and what you might think is a compliment to somebody could actually be really offensive to them. And especially like also with like, if someone has weight loss or like weight gain, like just if it's not something you can fix in 5 seconds, don't say anything about it. So like, if it's not like, say they had food in their teeth or something like that, something small, you can comment on that, but like, you don't need to comment on somebody's weight or their weight gain or weight loss, because you never know what they're going through that could be affecting those. And so I think it's just like really important to remember that remember, like, try to think before you speak, because you never know how that's going to affect somebody. You might think it's a compliment for them and they're going to feel amazing with that compliment, but it could also really hurt them in that moment and make them feel completely invalidated. And also, like, okay, like, I was really struggling and they are commenting on this. And so, but yeah,
what,
I mean, I've definitely.
What is a good suggestion you would have for somebody if, you know, when you're telling somebody, what's a supportive response that somebody could offer?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that, so are we talking about, like, what part are we talking about?
I think,
like,
if you were to tell somebody that you had, you know, I wanted to let you know that I'm, you know, I'm going to start treatment for an eating disorder that I've been struggling with. What would be a supportive response to that? Instead of, you don't look like you have an eating disorder. what would be a better, what would have made you feel better in that moment?
I definitely think for me personally, it would have been something like, I'm really proud of you for taking that step. Or just kind of really trying to have a validating stance on it. Like, that's a really big and hard step to take. I'm very proud of you. Or if there's anything I can do to help support you in your recovery, like, please let me know. Or just something where it's like, you let the person know you're there for them without having to comment and try to reassure them. It's more like, okay, this is me. I'm here for you. I'm here to support you. And just know that, like, you don't have to go through this alone, and, like, let me know if there's anything I can do to help. And, like, this doesn't mean you have to go out of your way to, like, bend backwards to make sure that they're checking in with you every night to tell you what they're eating or things like that. No, it can just be like sending your friends a text message on a day and just be like, hey, I'm thinking of you. I'm really proud of you. Or just something small like that, where, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be tied to something, but, like, can just let them know that, like, you appreciate them, you love them, and you support them.
Yeah,
definitely. I remember when I had to tell a group of people that I was going off to treatment for a while, and I remember them looking at me and, like, just telling me that they were thankful that I felt comfortable enough to let them know, because these weren't people that, like, it wasn't like my school administration or anyone I, like, had to tell. I just told them. And I think the words, like, I'm thankful that you felt comfortable enough to let me know, and I'm really proud of you. Like, that was something that was really, really powerful for me. And that's something I always tell anyone, regardless of what they're struggling with. I let them know that I'm honored that they trust me enough to tell me something like that, because I know that isn't easy. And just like what Nina said, just always telling them you're proud of them, and even just shooting them a little text, or like randomly FaceTiming them one day, whatever it is, and just letting them know you're thinking about them and that you're proud of them is really, really powerful and can be so helpful.
I think that's we ended it on a positive note. I like to do that. I feel like we call people out a lot on the podcast, but I also think it's good to provide alternatives to things that you could be saying instead. So thank you both for that. Yeah. Do you have anything else you want to add, either one of you?
Go follow us on Instagram at The Activist Collab, at Nourishing Nina, and Jalissa Manaya.
Yes, add all of that in the show notes. Thank you both so much for being here today. I really loved our conversation. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us today. To find out more about The Activist Collab, you can follow us on Instagram at The Activist Collab or online at theactivistcollab.com. New episodes of I Know You Meant Well will be coming out every Thursday. So we'll talk to you next week.